You're listening to Dissecting Popular IT Nerds. I hope you know that because you clicked listen. We're speaking with Eric Doherty. Am I pronouncing that right?
You are.
He asked me how I'm feeling, so I figured everyone out there wants to know maybe possibly the pains that I go through in life, and maybe there could be some insight from from the pharmaceutical giants and startups and all those people of the world. So I think it's appropriate to start with why I would have to go to Mexico to get injections or something like this, you know, if I had to, where the best place is. And I'm going to ask your advice since you offered it up. Yes. Yeah, so you asked me how I'm doing. How's the knee or back or whatever it is. It's not, I wouldn't say it's doing great. I'm thankful that I'm not paralyzed and I'm walking around. I was paralyzed pretty much down my right arm. I lost most of my right tricep. I do a lot of jiu-jitsu and surfing, and probably it was a culmination of those various different things that hurt me. But no, the right hip's messed up. I can't put my right leg behind my head. I can put my left leg behind my head, which is nice from a flexibility standpoint. Right side is totally gone. Right tricep shrunk to nothing. And I can do like maybe 3 push-ups now, which is 3 more than 0, which is what, and I was used to being able to do 70. So yeah. And my neck is, I've been going to physical therapy like 3 times a week for the last 3 months. And I would like to think that my flexibility is a lot better, but my back and all kinds of weird little interconnecting muscles and neck is just kind of in constant pain. So for anyone out there,
you know what they call that, Phil, don't you?
What?
Getting old.
Yeah. They said I have a case of OLD. So I've got I've come down with the OLD
case. The OLD disease.
But I think it's appropriate, you know, maybe AI can fix this, you know, because you're the kind
in time, of the I would say probably at least help and give better direction probably.
I've been holding out on getting the hip replacement.
But little generative AI, stop the jujitsu.
everyone tells me, you know, what I don't want to hear, which is like, yeah, stop doing everything that you really enjoy in life that's passionate about. So I'm just going to be miserable, I guess, but feel great.
Find tiddlywinks and things like that. It'll keep you focused.
I don't know what the
other hobbies.
No, but last time you gave some great advice, like I should go get some like stem cell injections or something, which I've been trying to figure out. I just want to make sure that it's not from some weird, like, you know, a bunch of aborted babies or something crazy like that. So I'm always very skeptical of where are we getting all these stem cells and everything from. So that's my only concern, I guess.
Yeah, and that would be a sort of a concern. Yes, I agree. But I think if you go to a reputable location, I think you'll be fine.
Like Mexico.
I'd say New Mexico would be better.
Where are all the UFC fighters going? Aren't they going to like right over the border? There's like, I'm trying to remember the
main. A lot of them go over to Europe. They go to Germany.
Okay.
Yeah. A lot of them are going over to Europe and getting things done. Tiger Woods did that with his knees, back probably to what, 8-10 years ago.
Did they fix him? Is he fixed yet, or is he still miserable? He's kind of a wreck.
That's a
good example.
He's a wreck after the wreck. I mean, unfortunately, after the automobile accident that he had, I mean, that's what really did him in. I think he was doing better because obviously here in Atlanta, he won the event here right before he won then the tournament over in Augusta. And, I think that accident just really put him back. I mean, you see him now, he's just in full pain. I don't think there's really any way that he's going to get better. I think it's just one of those things where, unfortunately, it's just going to diminish over time.
Mm. So on with the show and trying to keep, you know, I had a stand-up desk for a while. And I need to change that for my home office and get back. So trying to control my posture here for all of you out there that have nerd neck. If you don't know what that is, you should Google it solve that problem. You are not our typical guest. You're not our typical IT director, CTO, but you have and deal with a lot of technology. I do like, by the way, that you were the global VP of Block. Sounds fun. I like talking about guns if we can, if there's anything cool to talk about.
Same here.
Guns. Just bring that up every now and then, you know, talk about guns. And but now, you know, president and AI, you know, AI leader. What do we want to say? That I don't even know what AI.
I would say
talking about like the cloud. You know, everyone wants to throw around the cloud. What is AI? I mean, I'm using it.
I would say digital leader would be probably the better way to look at that, just because of the framework. I mean, again, you figure Gen AI is kind of the new frontier, but you know, it's been around for a number of years, and obviously machine learning AI has been around for probably 20 plus. And so the kind of digital side of it, to where the application of you know, taking data in, seeing what data looks like, manipulating the data, good or bad, and those are kind of the aspects of that digital leadership side of it, and figuring out kind of what landscape is ahead based on what's happened in the past.
Decipher that. I need you to break that down a little bit more. And I want to also provide to the listeners, how can we selfishly use this into our own advantage and give an advantage to the layman? Is that even possible? Is that even possible with just general AI speak in general? Is it going to create an even playing field, or is it going to create a data warehousing and people taking advantage of that, and only the people that have money, and there's going to create, is going to be more of a imbalance?
Yeah, we'll definitely go back on that one because I have some thoughts on that. Yeah, I think with generative AI, the ability to take data and build upon it is really the structure of what Gen AI is and will be. Mm-hmm. You know, to be able to look at something, take information in, and make it better, depending upon what area or aspect you're trying to make better, that is what Gen AI is all about. You know, again, I'm coming from the healthcare world, and again, Phil, really appreciate you. You know, allowing me to come on here, and you know, my background's in pharmaceuticals, my background's in pharmacy systems, my background's in medical device, and now going into the digital healthcare side of things, and you know, the framework of what Gen AI can do for those aspects, as far as healthcare aspects, are enormous. But even from a Gen AI standpoint, you know, moving into the manufacturing end of things, moving into the science end of things, aviation, you know, obviously space and kind of the movement towards that aspect. Gen AI is what will define, you know, kind of the future of technology, just because of the ability to take in data, see what's happening with that data, and make kind of outcomes better. That's the realization of what Gen AI is going to be doing. You know, in the world that I'm in healthcare, you know, we've talked obviously about the conditions you've got with your OLD disease, and the aspect of, you know, taking in imaging data, taking in pharmaceutical data as far as what medications you might be taking in anything that has to do with genetics, wrapping that all around within a generative AI construction point, and then obviously evaluating it and giving further information on that outcome of information about you and what you may need and what you may need to feel better and be better. That is all what's wrapped around Gen AI.
As a leadership in this space, first of all, can you break down these different categories? Because you're saying generative AI. So we've got this AI in general. Maybe we just, can you give us just some definitions just to educate some of the people out there?
Yeah, yeah. So you know, machine learning AI, machine learning artificial intelligence, that's been around for 20 plus years. And basically it would be taking data and then constructing algorithms around that data to come out with an outcome. So a good example, let's say you've got a jet engine as an example. And basically you want to make sure and ensure that that jet engine is working correctly over a period of time. Within the construct of data, you would be getting information out of that jet engine data from it. And then basically from it, knowing also how a jet engine performs well, and also on the flip side, how a jet engine does not perform well. And by knowing that information and then constructing the algorithms that are built around that, any data that comes in now from a new engine and basically showing that information on a real-time basis, that machine learning around that data will actually provide whether or not that engine's running correctly or incorrectly. Pushing it now into generative AI, what it's doing is taking that information and then enhancing upon it. So as you get the information in about that jet engine that's coming in real time, Now you're getting information on the Gen AI standpoint that actually says, hey, this jet engine is working well. I can do this, this, and this to make it even work better. That is what generative AI will and is doing.
Would you say it's safe to say it's preventing taking backward steps and making mistakes? And the reason why I'm asking is from the evolution of a business in the business landscape, generative AI could prevent a business from significantly wasting time and taking backward steps or making the same mistake again.
I totally agree. Yeah, it's really the efficiencies and making things more efficient. Ironically, there was the Forbes article that came out today that actually touched on that exactly, where the ability to actually increase efficiencies in the workplace, increase efficiencies within a working environment, be it a office space and or a jet engine and or pharmaceutical clinical trials, you know, all of that wrapped around kind of the aspect of data and enhancement of data. That's what that generative AI will do. I think the other kind of flip of it is to ensure that from a data standpoint, that the data is good data that's being analyzed. Because again, if you have bad data coming in, obviously, then you're going to probably have bad outcomes. You want to ensure that that data that is coming in is good data. So the kind of, I guess, the brain trust that's needed to ensure that that happens on a regular basis will prove out to be kind of the key element of driving towards that generative AI section. But that's kind of, you know, what it's I think ultimately built to do.
At Dissecting Popular IT Nerds, we expect to win, and we expect our IT directors to win. And one of those areas where we know that we can help you win is internet service providers. As an IT director tasked with managing internet connectivity, few vendor relationships can prove more painfully frustrating than the one with your internet service provider. The array of challenges seems never ending, from unreliable uptime and insufficient bandwidth to poor customer service and hidden fees. It's like getting stuck in rush hour traffic. Dealing with ISPs can try one's patience even on the best of days. So whether you are managing one location or 100 locations, our back office support team and vendor partners are the best in the industry. And the best part about this is none of this will ever cost you a dime due to the partnership and the sponsors that we have behind the scenes at Dissecting Popular IT Nerds. Let us show you how we can manage away the mediocrity and hit it out of the park. We start by mapping all of the available fiber routes, and we use our $1.2 billion in combined customer buying power and massive economy of scale to map all of your locations, to overcome construction fees, to use industry historical data, to encourage providers to compete for the lowest possible pricing, to negotiate the lowest rates guaranteed, and to provide fast response times in hours, not days. And we leverage aggregators and wholesale relationships to ensure you get the best possible pricing available in the marketplace. And on top of all of this, you get proactive network monitoring and proactive alerts so that you're not left calling 1-800-GO-POUND-SAND to enter in a ticket number and wonder, why is my internet connection down? In short, we are the partner that you have always wanted, who understands your needs, your frustrations, and knows what you need without you having to ask. So we're still human, but we are some of the best, and we aim to win. This all starts with a value discovery call where we find out what you have, why you have it, and what's on your roadmap. All you need to do is email internet@popularit.net and say, I want help managing all of my internet garbage. Please make my life easier, and we'll get right on it for you. Have a wonderful day.
Just putting yourself in the seat of CTO, CIO, IT leader, sitting in an organization that may be behind the times. Maybe they use Lotus Notes or something. It happens. It's still happening. It's still happening.
It is still
happening. And they've been one of the few leaders in the space for years. So they've kind of just been coasting on autopilot. Maybe they're run by the good old boys. I don't know. Maybe it's oil and gas or something. I don't know. I'm just trying to think. What should they be thinking? Where would they begin? Where would someone begin to come in and just say, hey, we need to do this and it's going to improve X? Like, I want to selfishly use some examples here or help some listeners on where they would begin. The other contrast is all these startups out there, and I've got my data scientist friends that like to talk Python language and all kinds of other insanity, and they're working like dogs for massive other, you know, whatever, in insurance companies or something, and crunching massive amounts of data that's already there, and they're very fearful of numerous things in the AI world, and it's the beginning of the end, and, you know, Terminator 2 is real and all these different things. So I don't know if that's, it's kind of, where do you get started?
Well, again,
is there certain industries that are going to do better, and there's some industries that are just going to be behind the times, I guess. I want to give something to I don't know, not lowly, but, you know, new guy comes in off the street. He's in charge of technology and business development or something like that, or working with business development, and they're doing nothing. They're doing nothing with their data. Maybe they have piles of data. They don't know where to look, something like that.
Yeah. Well, again, I'll go back to your Skynet part of it. I think that ultimately is what will drive, when I say Skynet, I call that competition. Mm-hmm. When you're in an organization that is using Lotus Notes and using old technology, now you've got the competitors that are outgating you, maybe have better revenues, but maybe have better people going to their organizations. You know, that's unfortunately, you know, maybe too late for that other organization to pivot and make a change. But there are obviously the telltale signs that company needs to make a change and get out of Lotus Notes and get into something better. Maybe it's Salesforce or something else.
Maybe they're a gun manufacturing company and they're new and they don't, what do they do?
What is the gun manufacturer that's new doing?
Well, yeah, I mean,
they're doing it probably because they've got new technology or new ways of doing things, or easier and faster ways of doing things. And that is probably, again, where they might be using better machine learning generative AI, but also mm-hmm. probably using better generative AI going forward. And really that defining part of, you know, differentiating that company from an older company or more mature company, because they're the ones that use the new technology. They're the ones that look at new ways of improving things. Whereas it's not the stalwart type of corporation where they have been doing something for the past 10, 20, 30 years and don't have much of a change need. Their competition will make that change need.
Tell me about being in pharmaceuticals and COVID. How did we develop this, vaccine so fast? How to use AI?
Yeah, great question there. I don't know if you caught it, but over the weekend, there was actually something on CBS Morning about the two folks that actually worked on that vaccine with Pfizer. Mm-hmm. You know, it was obviously a speed to market using RNA. You know, that was their really kind of focal point, just because of the potential aspects of not only for COVID, but for other diseases, and the ability to run through kind of the ability of data with generative AI, and to be able to run that very fast based on some of the information that was coming in from the different clinical trial cohorts that they were using, mm-hmm. they were able to speed that to market. Good and bad. You know, I think in time will tell. I think in the short period of time, in not only development, but also from an outcome standpoint, as people were using the vaccines and being given multiple vaccines, you know, the health outcomes that were provided for those patients were actually quite strong. The fallback on it, though, will be, you know, what long-term effects might they have for patients? Obviously, there's been some things coming out around cardiovascular issues. There's been some things coming out around muscle deterioration issues. So that kind of part of it, you know, could be something underlying within an RNA setting as a whole. But it also could be just an RNA setting for that type of vaccine work. So time will tell. But I think the ability to use Gen AI in that structure of data that was coming in, and to try to turn something around from a product standpoint so quickly, and that was really kind of unfortunately needed desperately. I'm sure that, you know, things were pushed through a little faster than normal just because of that. But I think the outcomes, and even in that interview that was performed by the two folks that ran that vaccine program with Pfizer, I mean, you know, the outcomes of information where patients, you know, were no longer dying, that patients were no longer having as many issues with COVID now that they were using it and been given the vaccine, it was pretty telling. And again,
why the five boosters? Why so many boosters? What happened to like it just being successful from the get-go? I'm just curious.
Well, that was because of the way the molecule was, or the virus was replicating. So the issue was, yes, you have a virus, right?
Yeah.
And you
was morphing
vaccine for that one virus.
Yeah.
The problem is that actually it was replicating in different forms and fashions. And when it does that, obviously it does a twist, as an example, that's the best way to put it. It'll twist into a different type of design. You've got to have a different type of vaccine to work against that different design. And as it did that, it did basically did that over time and basically would change over time. So you need a different vaccine to make sure that you hit that different change as it changed. That was why you needed different modes and modalities of the vaccine. Very
like
interesting.
Kind of like the flu, maybe the flu.
Well, yeah, exactly. Where each year they had come up with the flu that they should see as being the big flu type of virus. Yeah, same type of thing. And what was interesting with that one, and again talking to Dr. Redfield, what was interesting with the virus and the way it worked is that the way it was structured, probably out of the Wuhan lab in China. The way it was structured to do that. It was structured not to stay as a one format type of virus. It was structured to make that change, to be something that could not be conquered. That was ultimately what they were trying to drive towards with that virus.
So definitely, I'm of the opinion that it was absolutely manufactured after watching Endless and going down the kind of like, when you want to say, what's wrong with me, the gain of function research,
Yeah.
You know, wormhole from watching endless hours on this stuff. My opinion is
totally good. Well, I will stake a huge claim on it. I will guarantee it was manufactured in the Wuhan lab. The issue is, was it released or was it moved? And so,
or a mistake or whatever. Yeah.
So, you know, somebody walked out by accident. I mean, I think that's ultimately what probably happened, where somebody left without knowing somehow, some way that they had contracted it. And then literally as it was supposed and it was basically designed to do, it moved into the population quite rapidly. And that was exactly what it was supposed
to do. I'm very skeptical of why we would do this research to begin with. I do not believe the premise that we need to do gain of function research in order to be prepared for a weird, you know, virus morphing type of thing.
I think the only kind of comeback on that is twofold. Obviously, you have those organizations, countries around the world that would differ with that opinion. I think the other ultimate thing would be if there is something that comes in from outer space, be it a meteor, some type of something in. Well, I mean, that's basically what it, you know, something that comes in.
That's wild. What are the chances? But that's wild. But okay. So some living organisms going to come in off a meteor from outer space where there's no foreseen living anything anywhere near. But keep going. I'm down with it.
Yeah.
It's kind of like we had to be careful. That's the excuse that NASA had with the moon rocks or something, and why we had to lock up the original astronauts that supposedly went to the moon for months before they were able to speak live on TV, because we had to detox them from a complete sterile environment on the moon.
Well, then there was Capricorn 1, but we won't even go there. Yeah. But
please explain so I can talk about this in future episodes.
Yeah, yeah.
Capricorn 1 on the side note. But anyways, okay. That seems
absurd. I think that's where it's more.
I'd rather put the money into making a better seatbelt. But okay. Yes.
Yeah, I think it was more the preparedness for the unprepared. I think that's ultimately what they're trying to drive towards, just to make sure that if something happens, there's something there they can fight it.
Like maybe the world population growing too much, and you know, maybe somehow the population of the world got too big, and we need to, I don't know, we have eugenics beliefs.
Call the herd.
Maybe that. So I know you want to talk about, so then, which brings up a good point. Why, I know that from a scientific nerd standpoint, right, we're using generative AI from a mathematical standpoint to put together models and come out with outcomes without having to actually test said outcomes. Is this, am I talking smart? Am I talking nerdy?
Yeah, you are.
From a generative,
I was going to say, let me touch on that real quick. That really is where the pharmaceutical industry is kind of moving towards, because as you may or may not know, you know, within the pharma industry, typically what happens is you have a drug that's found. They basically have found something that they want to use for, let's say, prevention of heart attacks, as an example, which obviously there's nothing right now that can specifically do that, but let's just say there is. And then what they do is they move that drug concept into literally clinical trials. The initial ramp up would be within an animal setting. So they do an animal clinical trial and then move it into more of a human clinical trial setting. It's where the animal clinical trial setting is being really looked at with generative AI, where over time, probably the next 5 to 10 years, they can do a drug discovery. And then based on the generative AI that can be run from a data composition standpoint on that drug structure, they might be able to bypass an animal clinical trial. And that's going to be huge, because then you look at the time aspect of a clinical trial and bringing a product to market, but also a cost standpoint and really reducing the cost structure around bringing a product to market. So
we might as well just do that with the, we could do that with everything else. Why don't we do it with the presidential election and just run the numbers right now? And just, you know, we'll just, I'm sure like we could just maybe grant whoever the, maybe Trump the presidency right now. We don't even have to vote, right?
Well, that's probably what happened in 2020, but no comment. But you know, and I think, you know, where the problem would lie with that is that, again, from a structured standpoint for a country, you'd obviously have some issues doing that. So I think you still have to have the people, per se, make that voting presence known.
I just, full disclaimer, I have no political views on the United States political system. I don't even vote, and everyone can come on my show and we can talk about that. But the point is the segue into, you've said we need guardrails in AI. What do you mean by that? And how is anyone going to control that? Is there like some kind of like black hat AI going on as well? Or, what's going on?
Yeah.
How do I get involved?
Yeah. Well, I'm trying to do that. I think, you know, and try to be part of that. You know, as you can see from the news headlines probably over the last couple of months with ChatGPT and OpenAI, I mean, all of those groups are kind of vying and trying to be the ones to direct things going forward. I think, you know, where we're kind of thinking through what's needed is there's got to be aspects of not only how the information is being used, where is the privacy settings being set and also being allowed, and then who's going to be having access to this data. That is kind of the three critical points that I think are going to be having to be decided upon here over the next probably a year to 2 years at the most, just because of how fast things are moving. But those are some of the critical kind of needs right now, because it's the wild, wild west within the AI world right now.
Is it really? I kind of hope that it is. But I think ChatGPT, Claude, they got bought by AWS or whatever, I mean, Amazon or whatever, right? I think they've already become too woke. I'm just the reason why I say that is because there's certain questions that I play around with, and you know, and it's like I don't feel comfortable answering that question in this context or light, and you know, and some of the info that I feed it, just I'm talking just ChatGPT or just like in general, will feed actual info to it, and what it will pop. Obviously, it's not perfect. But it's popping out some very, from my perspective, filtered non-responses.
But see, I think that's probably because of all the other information that's coming in to the
problem.
So let's just kind of hypothetically here. Let's say you have a population of people, and 30% are the conservative straight line, and 70% are the woke side of it. You're going to have that are using it. You're going to have obviously more woke information coming in, more woke information coming out. So that goes back, and that goes back to my bad data in, bad data out. That's kind of the concept of what's needed within the Gen AI space, where you've got
guardrails. So guardrails. What's a guardrail? I know what a guardrail is, but what do you mean? Like, what's a guardrail in AI?
A guardrail in AI will be some type of form or fashion that allows that good information to go in and good information to come out, to ensure that the bad data, the data that is overpopulated data, if you want to call it woke data, I would, you know, you can call it that, but I would say data that's coming in that is unfactual, that is misrepresented, that would be considered bad data. And so the ability to, again, how you're going to do that, that's where the IT guys come really into play. But there's got to be ways to ensure that that data is recognizable, that data is repeatable, that that data is trustworthy. And so if you can do that, that's where the guardrails could be in place.
Okay. We don't really know if it can be done, though. How do you know what you don't know?
Don't know yet. Yeah, don't know. I guess you could just... Still to be defined. I mean, it's...
Turn
being,
it into a vaccine, and if you die, you die.
Well, that they can usually tell if you're dead or not, but, you know.
Well, we won't know if it's 20, 30 years from now, or if I'm,
frozen,
sterile or not, but I'm unvaccinated, just so you know. Will they let me travel? Will they control me more in the future with some kind of digital currency or something like that? Digital currency come into this at all? Are they going to start tracking how much carbon footprint I have and all this other type of stuff?
They're already doing it.
Yes.
They are.
Of course they are.
Yeah. I mean, you look at from a data analytics standpoint, every time you use a credit card, not only do they know how much you spent, where you spent, they know exactly where you were, obviously, because they know you're at that store at that time. Think of that.
Well, I'm logged into Google Maps, so they already know where I've traveled everywhere last year, which is kind of funny. They do somehow know after I've had a conversation to feed me that ad, which is also unbelievable.
And then probably in very due time, they'll be able to figure out, okay, if he does this on a Tuesday afternoon, he'll probably do it again on a Tuesday afternoon this week because of generative AI. Scary. It is, but it's pretty much because of the data that's coming in can figure that out.
The safest places in the world are the ones most behind in technology and the most people that don't give a crap and are super poor, probably.
Probably, I would say, in the basically deepest, darkest hole you can find next to a mountain with a lot of trees.
Let's go. I'm ready. I'm ready. What other fears, dooms, and glooms do we have?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I as things are moving forward, I think, again, you brought up the Skynet thing with Terminator 2, and I bring that up too. You know, is there that could happen? Without guardrails, I would say yes. Without some type of oversight, I would say yes. The ability to basically take hold of, an electrical infrastructure, to take hold of, you know, gas line infrastructure, as we've seen, even just by folks, you know, trying to tap in from a data composition standpoint and really kind of, you know, throwing their software in chaos, you know, it could be done by an individual. If it could be done by an individual, it could be done by a computer. So that would be, you know, one kind of scary element. Yes, I see that. Is there a war games type of scenario where it could take over the defense end of things? Is where the guardrails are needed. And so, I think that's the scary part, but I'll flip it over to the other side where there's some huge, I think, benefits that come out of it. You know, I look at the ability, as we talked about with some of the health elements, you know, if you've got a patient who is a cardiac patient, you've got them on, you know, X drugs, you've got them, doing certain rehab, you've got them with a genetic lab buildup of information, you know, there will be in very, very short time the ability to say this patient at this age with this disease at this time frame in their life, this is what they will need from a medication standpoint. This is what they'll need from a rehab standpoint. And this is what they'll need and get from their outcomes. That will be ultimately what will drive on the healthcare side. On the manufacturing side, it's all about efficiencies. I think we'll find that there will be numerous ways of benefit within the generative AI setting where they'll be able to figure out faster ways of deliveries, faster ways of processing, faster ways of manufacturing certain products. That will be kind of the ultimate play with Gen AI and the ultimate benefits of what it'll bring to the communities.
I would love to use it right now to do background checks on all contractors that ever work at my house. I wish we could do that. You know, screw privacy. I want to know.
Yeah, Angie kind of does that now, but you know, even to ultimately do it. Yeah.
No, Angie suck.
Well, I'm just saying.
I've hired so many screwed up, so many bad jobs off Angie. Angie, I wish you could. I'd like to replace Angie right now. Oh, Angie is no longer around anyways. Angie cashed out years ago. Angie's laughing right now. The last drywall guy I hired off of Angie, he does not. He does not
still,
know.
Still, the walls are still wet, huh?
No, it's not. You know, that was a problem for a while, but he definitely doesn't know layering and sanding. And you don't lay down the mud and paint and then sand. And oh my gosh. Oh, that's where we need generative AI to sift and sort through all these people. But then the one guy that actually is the good electrician that would show up, nope, they're done. This is just a plug for everyone to go back to trade school, please, and stop being lazy Gen Zers, whoever you are that I want to pigeonhole right now. Please go learn how to work so that I can hire an electrician that will show up on time.
On time and do good work.
Yes, yes, yes.
That'd be nice.
That's where we really need. That's where we really need Gen AI. For the rest of the world, yes, I don't know what this means for politics. I'm highly skeptical. I don't think it really matters anyways. Now it definitely might get into the wrong hands, but it may. It may. We don't need to use Terminator 2 as the example. Maybe we could use. Let's see. We got to bring Arnold into this Running Man, where the satellite up. Tick guys hack the network or something, and you know,
yeah,
maybe the right guys will do something good. I don't know. And I am not calling for any type of revolution. I do believe that you should be a law-abiding citizen. I am not saying any of that. So I don't know. There's this weird.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I'm going to go back to just to kind of like timeliness. I mean, here in Fulton County, in Atlanta, Georgia, where I'm at, they got hacked. The government got hacked a couple of weeks ago.
Of course they did.
We asked to pay a ransom for the data that was hacked into. And so they did not pay it, supposedly.
Of course they didn't. What's it worth?
Yeah. That's the kind of thing where if you've got hackers that are already doing that, obviously Gen AI in time could do it itself if it's correctly set up that way, which would be obviously very hazardous to information out there. And so it really needs that kind of aspect of guardrails on, basically who has access to the data, who has access to manipulate the data, all of that kind of wraps it around that safety aspect of what Gen AI can and can't do.
Losing data in a pharmaceutical company, bad. Local county government, I would love to know how does that, I would just really, they might just say, we just freed up the budget.
But see, they've got all the tax information. They have all the people information of the county. So
true.
Yeah.
True, but it's a government institution, so they might just say, I don't know, who are they going to sue? I don't know. It's like I don't know. I know local municipalities and governments and kind of when people make a mistake, they just get run out of town and it's like start over, I guess. I don't know. I don't know about Atlanta, though. Atlanta might be a little bit different down there.
Yeah, and Fulton County is a pretty decent-sized county, so I'm sure the data that they had breached was quite extensive.
Ah, yes. It's too bad. It's too bad. My sister's hospital was a ransomware attack as well. Down for weeks. Didn't pay it.
Yeah,
and they've been just down for weeks. Weeks.
Yeah.
Hospital.
Yeah, and they actually still are having some issues. There's a lot of, what other systems are still down here in Atlanta. It's not a good thing. And again, it's the vulnerability of it too, because they're going after those, like hospitals and things. I would say organizations and companies that really didn't have a lot of the IT security infrastructure in place, and so they've gone after them and tried to get an easy buck out of it. And a lot of it, it's not U.S.-based. It's outside of the U.S. It's coming in from other countries and, your typical, Iran, China, Russia, those countries that unfortunately are fighting against the U.S., you know, that's where it's really starting up from.
At Dissecting Popular IT Nerds, we expect to win, and we expect our IT directors to win. And one of those areas where we know that we can help you win is internet service providers. As an IT director tasked with managing internet connectivity, few vendor relationships can prove more painfully frustrating than the one with your internet service provider. The array of challenges seems never-ending, from unreliable uptime and insufficient bandwidth to poor customer service and hidden fees. It's like getting stuck in rush hour traffic. Dealing with ISPs can try one's patience even on the best of days. So whether you are managing one location or 100 locations, our back office support team and vendor partners are the best in the industry. And the best part about this is none of this will ever cost you a dime due to the partnership and the sponsors that we have behind the scenes at Dissecting Popular IT Nerds. Let us show you how we can manage away the mediocrity and hit it out of the park. We start by mapping all of the available fiber routes, and we use our $1.2 billion in combined customer buying power and massive economy of scale to map all of your locations, to overcome construction fees, to use industry historical data, to encourage providers to compete for the lowest possible pricing, to negotiate the lowest rates guaranteed, and to provide fast response times in hours, not days. And we leverage aggregators and wholesale relationships to ensure you get the best possible pricing available in the marketplace. And on top of all of this, you get proactive network monitoring and proactive alerts so that you're not left calling 1-800-GO-POUND-SAND to enter in a ticket number and wonder, why is my internet connection down? In short, we are the partner that you have always wanted, who understands your needs, your frustrations, and knows what you need without you having to ask. So we're still human, but we are some of the best, and we aim to win. This all starts with a value discovery call where we find out what you have, why you have it, and what's on your roadmap. All you need to do is email internet@popularit.net and say, I want help managing all of my internet garbage. Please make my life easier, and we'll get right on it for you. Have a wonderful day.
So U.S. healthcare, just in general, since you've come from that space, it seems that there's the pharmaceutical giants that they do all right money-wise. They make some money. You have the healthcare system from a network standpoint, from an IT standpoint, I find to be a duct-taped together bureaucracy of networks and IT folks and CTOs. And then you have the, if anyone out there knows how hospitals work, there's very much a political pecking order and very interesting juggernaut of issues and problems. Then you've got the insurance companies standing there in between. What are the problems with our healthcare system? You know,
do we have,
no, I mean, really, like, another day in all honesty, month, yeah. It's like, is the money the problem? Is the people it's making the money the problem?
No, it's the efficiencies. What's happened over the last 30 years as technologies come in, because again, that's kind of the aspect. You have the doctors that would see the patients in people's homes or they'd come to the office. That was kind of the format. And then obviously the hospitals then became more of a construct around that, where they had the hospital and then they owned the doctors and they basically set up all the clinics around it. And you know, that structure has not moved as fast as the technology. And what's happened over time is the ability to communicate in and amongst the hospitals and in and amongst the networks. That's really the issue. Good example. You've got, you know, as an example, Peakmont here in Atlanta, where it's a very, very large healthcare network. They've got multiple hospitals. The ability to talk amongst themselves is very fragmented. They don't have, what's that?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's so ridiculous.
And so that's where it gets bogged down, where, you know, you've got basically information that's, you know, you're being seen by a cardiologist. You need to be seen by a respiratory therapist. They're not talking directly. They may talk indirectly through the data. They may not get the data in the right amount of time. There's all of these nuances that happen within that patient kind of viewpoint. And so the kind of structure of following a patient along their pathway and along their journey of care is so fragmented. And then you throw in, if that patient goes from Piedmont to another health network, they're never going to talk. And so that's where the aspect of kind of that information need is so apparent, and that information
transfusion of data
is it, and basically moving that data. Yeah. And so the ability of like EHRs, if you've got a Epic EHR electronic health record system at Piedmont, and you have a Oracle Cerner electronic health record at Emory here in Atlanta, they don't talk to each other.
My skepticism of this, and I'm not a, if I'd probably get arrested and be called a commie back in the day for this, but my skepticism is there's so much money to be made in healthcare. There's so much money to be made in pharmaceuticals, aka Pharma Boy. I wish I had like a little soundboy from Pharma Boy back in the day. You being in pharmaceuticals know very well the amount of money that is made in pharmaceuticals. Knowing the hospital system and the way that insurance works, people make a lot of money in healthcare insurance. And Epic makes an epic amount of money when it comes to electronic medical records and stuff. Maybe, and then, you know, then of course us being in a very, I don't know what you call it, I would say bipolar political system. How could you ever get any type of, I don't know, laws passed or changes made in a healthcare system that don't get eventually reversed or screwed up Obamacare, to make anything happen? And yet we have some of the best research facilities and technology available to us in the globe. And then there's this whole other aspect of, well, it's not preventative. It's just, you know, cut the leg off type of, you know, non-preventative medicine type of thing. So I've got to go down this, got to go to Mexico to get the stem cell research because it's delayed. But somehow we've got a COVID vaccine and five other boosters ready right away. Why? How much money was made? So that's, it would be very hard to not to convince me otherwise that money is not the main driver of all this.
No,
that too much money is being put into other people's pockets and getting filtered and sifted off to somewhere else other than so-and-so in West Virginia who needs a hip replacement or cancer medicine or something, who's just straight up not going to get it. Yeah. And I'm just going to
shout out to PTI and both Mike and Tony Kornheiser. Their adage when it comes to sports is always, you know, follow the money and where does the money come from? that's exactly what happens here, you know. And again, you have to understand that, yes, there are, I guess, revenue drivers, profit drivers around any business, okay? Yeah, any profit-loving business, yeah. Yes. But there's also the cost aspect. And so when it comes to, and I'll, you know, throw on the pharmaceutical side of things, when it comes to bringing a product to market, bringing a pharmaceutical drug to market, the costs around doing that are exponential. I mean, in the millions, where the clinical trial dollars, the drug discovery dollars, just to even come to a clinical trial, then you have all of the production costs of that drug as it's being used to bring it to market. Those are huge costs. So, I mean, there's that element of it. Mm-hmm. But yes, I understand the profit side too. And I think from a business end of things, you've got to be profitable. I mean, that's what the American way is, right? You know, you have a business, you want to make it profitable, you want to make it sustainable and ensure that that business will be here for a number of years. The hospitals are able to do that if they're a profit or for-profit hospital system. But even in the nonprofit hospital system format, they still have to drive revenues to ensure that they have growth of some sort. So that I understand. I think where it really comes down to is, you know, how are things being run from a payer standpoint, from an insurance standpoint? What benefits are they paying out above and beyond what's needed? That's number one. Number two, it's really it's the patient outcome and really ensuring that patient is taken care of quickly, correctly, but also ensuring that patient is doing well after they leave the hospital, after they leave the facility, to ensure they don't come back in. That's kind of what the ultimate, I would say, cost driver is, where if you've got a patient who, you know, has surgery at a hospital, they leave the hospital, and then for some reason or other, they're doing poorly, they have to come back in. That's where the cost exacerbates itself within the healthcare setting. And so if there's ways to improve the health of a patient when they do leave a facility or do leave a clinic and maybe be better treated at home, maybe be better treated at an outpatient facility before they come back into a hospital setting. That is kind of the ultimate driver to ensure that that costs are reduced, that the payers don't have to pay as much, and that ultimately our insurance premiums aren't as high over the long
run. I'm not a hater. I'm just asking questions because I know, because I just came from a place where I happened to be doing some jujitsu slowly. And one of the guys said, yeah, you don't want to tear an ACL or an MCL here in Morocco or break a leg. Because if you do, that's for the rest of your life. Meaning there's nowhere you're going to get surgery if you don't have a lot of money or wait in line or get, you know. So I'm not a hater. I just think there's a lot of good that can be done.
Well, but again, let's turn it around to the cost standpoint and the revenue standpoint. If you're in that country and you don't have the ability to see a practitioner to get your ailment fixed, look at what we have in our system in the United States, where you can go. I can go 1 mile that way to Emory by me and go see a doctor and get fixed. You know, there's that side of it too, where, hey, the infrastructure that's wrapped around kind of the U.S. marketplace is so much better than a lot of places around the world. You've got that specialty, I think, that you can tap into quite easily here that you don't have in other countries. And a lot of that is because of the way that things are rooted around business and the driver of corporate growth.
It is business. And I was looking around, like, how many MRI machines are within a, you know, 20 mile radius or something. There was three.
25.
There was three in Morocco where I was. Three.
I think two. I think here in the United States, I got probably 25 around here.
Oh yeah, for sure. Everywhere. Yeah. And there was, you know, two of them were like, they're like, yeah, and you don't even want to use that machine. So so I don't know what we've solved today with generative AI. What I do want is to leave you with one final thought or message to the listeners. And that is, I don't know, what do we do? Where do we begin? Phil Howard, leader of Dissecting Popular IT Nerds, where do I begin? Where do I tell other people to begin? Whether it be manufacturing, whether it be healthcare, whether it be whatever, is it, do I hire the right people? Do I go look on some forum? What do I want to do to get to the top to, be more effective, more competitive in the marketplace, to win more? What do I do?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is don't be fearful. You hear so much right now about generative AI and the fear around it and the fear of using it and the fear of what it can do. There's so much that it can do. There's so much that it will be doing. And so really losing that fear part of it, I think, is number one. Number two is embracing it. I think there are great opportunities with what's being built, what's being used today, what will be used in the future. And so by embracing it and really taking hold of the potential possibilities of what it can do for your business, depending upon what area of business you're currently working at, I think that is a huge benefit to the organization. And then I think last but not least is, you know, look at potentially new ways of using the information, new ways of using generative AI. You know, if there's something in your workplace that you say, hey, you know, maybe there's a way of drawing upon better efficiencies. Maybe there's the way of doing things just a little better. You know, maybe you look at the aspects of bringing in generative AI around that and seeing what it might be able to do.
So why don't you just take a few minutes and just talk about what you're doing right now and how you guys are using it, and we'll leave it at that, because you are in biotech research.
Yeah. So, you know, from an organization standpoint, you know, the use of data is key, as we've talked about. And again, good data is good data in, good data out. The ability to do real-time analytics is kind of the aspect of what that data composition can entail. And so the ability to look at different use cases, the ability to look at different structures of information and what you want to do with it, and then have the ability to run real-time analytics off of it, that is the structure. And so with generative AI, the ability to take information, obviously with machine learning and algorithms, but also build upon it is the exact structure that it's defined around.
Thank you. Thank you for being on the show. I guess being the positive light for AI I don't see why we should be afraid of much because we're all going to die someday anyway. So if anything, if it can help us live longer, that's fine.
Or you die sooner. One of the two. Just you know,
how they if Terminator 2 does happen,
depends on what kind of guardrails are put on the generative AI data.
Thank you.